and welcome to the Steam Power Podcast. Chicka 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 chicka.
All right, hello, welcome, live from beautiful downtown Southern Maryland. It's the Steam Power Podcast, episode number 62 for March 14th, 2015, which is
Pi Day.
Happy Pi Day to everybody. We are a bi-weekly podcast dedicated to discovering and sharing the latest and the greatest in science and technology, engineering, art, and math news, as well as the open source and maker movement. Steam Power, the power to change the world. I'm Mike.
I'm Lisa.
And it's time to get
steamy.
Welcome back.
Are you talking to me?
I'm talking to you because you missed last week. You were tardy.
Yes. I wasn't.
You were tardy. You were not here. Were you?
I was in the infirmary.
Well, you were infirmary.
I was infirmed.
Infirmary.
And so. I'm still not 100%, so excuse my voice if it's a little bit raspy sounding, but
it's very nice.
It's husky.
Husky. So yes, today is March 14th as we record this, which is once every 100 years you get the 15th year of the century. So since this is the 15th year of the 21st century, I guess, I don't know if it's the 16th or 15th. But anyway, it ends in a 15, so you get 3.1415, and I think tonight at 9:26, 2356, I can't pie that far out. So you can go, if you really want to celebrate, you got to wait till like 9:30 tonight, and you can go 3.1415.
I'm lucky, I remember pi being 3.14.
14, yeah, you're right, 3.1415, 9265. Three, I think.
Yeah.
Or six. Yeah. Anyway.
What is happy the Pi Day.
What's a few decimal points between friends? Just the difference between life and death, I guess. In technology. Certain technology.
Yes, that's true.
Something like that. So
a few decimal points is a big difference in the coding world, huh?
Yeah, you know. Either you skim off the atmosphere or you burn up on reentry.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Whatevs.
So I guess let's see here. So last week I got to interview my old scouting buddy who's now a professor at Full Sail University.
Yes, and I got to see part of the interview, and that looks like a very interesting place.
I have gotten a lot of positive feedback from that one, from both people, my virtual friends, as well as people who at my real job apparently do stalk me and watch it and have seen it. Enjoyed it as well. So that was cool.
That's cool.
Yeah, I think he's got a great job.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that, like, you know.
I mean, I think it's interesting because, to be honest, I never heard of that university until you mentioned it, but it really looks like it's sort of on the forefront of what it does.
I think so. I mean.
It looks like it's very specialized.
Very specialized.
Which, honestly, I think is the way we should head in colleges and universities, because it although devil's advocate to that is for the kids that go out of high school and don't know what they want to do.
Sure. Well, that's
should
another
we let
case,
them take
yeah.
a year or two off to find theirself, backpack around Europe, you know, do
I've
the whole find
straight.
Myself thing.
We need to have
figure out what I want to do with my life and then go to college.
I think we should
and
raise
go
taxes
to one of those,
and subsidize that.
And go to one of those small specialized universities like that. Because to be honest, I was one of those kids that when I got out of high school, I thought I knew what I wanted to do. And I got to college and I figured out that wasn't what I wanted to do.
The thing that you thought you started with.
I wanted to be a forensic scientist. Ooh. Really badly.
You wanted to be CSI. Basically.
I wanted to work for the FBI. Yeah,
you wanted to be a crime scene investigator.
I did. I mean, my dad was a state police officer. I wanted to work for the FBI. I thought I had it all figured out. I wanted to do crime scene investigations. I wanted to do, you know, work with fingerprinting and blood spatters and all that kind of stuff. But then when I got to college.
So what changed?
Well, when I actually started taking the biology courses, for it, I found out that's not what I was naturally good at.
Bio. Ugh.
It just wasn't a natural strength of mine. Was I still very interested in forensic science? Yes. And I still am actually very interested in forensic right. science. But an interest doesn't necessarily match up to a talent, so to speak.
Can you become like an amateur crime scene investigator?
Maybe on like CSI, a computer game or something. But
I've heard reviews. I haven't seen the episodes of the new CSI Cyber. I've heard it's really
I used to watch the X-Files, but I haven't seen a lot since the X-Files days.
I heard they're trying to get David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson to sign back up.
I used to think he was so hot.
He's a good looking man. Yeah, he's not going to lie.
Never watched Californication, but I used to think he was so hot, man.
Yeah, there's talk that X-Files come back. Since again, like, you know, when X-Files came out the first time, there we were at this height of, you know, anti-government, right-wing yes. conspiracy. And it really hit its stride when, like, we had, like, you know, with Waco and all the other. So right now, hey, we're riding high on another anti-government, right-wing shoot 'em out.
I don't know if I'd call it that much.
But I don't know. Maybe, man. That's just my thought. I'm thinking.
I don't know if I'd go that
I'm
far.
I'm thinking you got to hit while the iron's hot, right?
Strike while the iron's hot.
And so if there's any time to do an X-Files movie, now's the time.
But, I mean, back to your...
what was I going with that?
We were talking about
you
your friend.
You want to be a crime scene. Oh,
yes, and what I think what my point was is that I think it really is great for those kids to get to go to a university like that that is so small and specialized and compact because they do it in, what, 2 years?
Yep, they said like 21 months, I think.
Yes, and, I mean, honestly, that's... You know, why do you need a summer off?
You're not going to get
in
summer
college,
off.
You're not going to get summer off when you go to job.
Right.
So why do you need
college,
a summer off?
Unless you're a college professor or a teacher.
That's true. But, you know, why not structure a college like that? But in order to go to a college like that, I think you have to really know that that's your niche and that's what you want to do. So it's not just enough for kids to be interested
that's
in
any
it.
Any college. To get any degree is, these days is... Okay,
but my point is it's not enough to be interested in it. You have to know that you're good at it. And how do you know that you're good at something unless you've... Yes. And that's what I figured out when I started college my freshman year was when I got into the bio classes, that's not where my passion was. My passion was more in the psychology, sociology realm.
Because
my passion was for the people and not... so much for the science.
Because passion can overcome the lack of natural ability. Like, I'm not that great at math. Not horrible, but I'm not great at it. And
I wouldn't say you're horrible at it.
But because
sure.
it's fundamental to doing engineering type work, I...
You're able to help our fourth grader out with her math, which I am not some nights. So.
The way they teach division anymore, you need a PhD.
Oh, the shame, the horror.
You do need a PhD in elementary education to teach. You even do your kids' homework.
The shame and the horror.
So, anyway, so big thanks
to Mike.
But
it was
Mike.
A good, I found it was a really good interview. I was really interested in seeing the university and all the different things that it offered, and hopefully... That opened up a few more eyes to it. So
hopefully, fingers crossed. That's what we're doing here. That's the whole idea of this podcast.
He seemed like he had a good time.
Or he's both a former student and now a professor there. So yeah, he obviously, I think, we got to adjust this camera thing because you look so tiny.
That's okay. I can look tiny. That's
you look
fine.
So tiny. You look so cute. It makes my head look so huge.
Now, what is he a professor in exactly?
He teaches.
So he does the coding.
He's teaching how to write smartphone apps. Yep.
iOS.
I think they're getting there, but I think he does Android. I don't know if he.
I was
going to
say, why can't he give you the hookup if that's true?
Yeah, well, because from a maker, Android really is where if you want to do apps custom for yourself, Android is the way to do it.
I know, but if he knows iOS, man, you need to get him to give you the hookup.
I'm learning. There's a really good...
I would love to learn iOS apps, but I just can't. I've put the program on the computer. I've got CrickCrack going, which is my first app. But I just... CrickCrack. I just can't... I can't wrap my head around it for some reason.
It's a... Yes, that's what I...
It's kind of complicated.
A different mindset of programming.
But then I look at all these games on the iOS store, and I think some college kid or some high schooler wrote this app, and it's so terrible, and why can't I write one that's
terrible, as equally as terrible?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I hear you. Well, realize that there are...
Now, there are great apps on the App Store. There are, like, wonderful, but, like, Monument Valley-type apps on the App Store. But
and there are tools that let you write apps that is not Xcode. There are things you can get, and they're not as good from what I understand and from what I've played with. So, yeah, there are third-party tools that try to make Android or iOS development easier. They just tend not to be as quality. So, probably a lot of the crappy apps you're seeing are based on these third-party tools. But
still, it's kind of discouraging.
Well, I mean, I think we're maturing.
It really is.
We're maturing. I think that...
Because I think I'm not a stupid person, but I just can't wrap my head around it for some reason.
For people like us that came out of like the procedural coding where C, C++, yes. Basic, where it was just this, you know, everything was self-contained.
I did Java in college.
Right. These, you know, this whole MVC concept of that, you know, apps today, you know, model view controller, it's a different thing to wrap your head around, and you're not really...
You have to be in the
passionate.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard.
I will say I'm not passionate about writing. I would love to know how to do it, just a little check mark in my box, but I'm not passionate about writing apps.
So what do you say we get into the
story? All right, we got to thank our
we got to do the sponsor thing.
Audible.
Go click on.
Which, like, I will really say, I listen.
I'm actually using
Audible.
Customers now.
Yes. And I listened to part of Yes Please on my way to the doctor the other day. And I really, really enjoy listening to the audiobook as opposed to listening to the radio.
Because the radio at the end of the day is the same old, same old. They repeat the same news.
Same songs.
And they're all the same songs.
And I love music. Don't get me wrong. I love music. But yes, you're right. It's the same songs. It's the same commercials. It just gets a little monotonous after a while, but I'm trying to figure out which book. I think I'm going to go for Tina Fey's Bossy Pants next.
Because we do have the...
we have the credit, right? The credit. I think so.
Credit is there.
I've got Amy Poehler's Yes, Please Now, which is actually a very insightful and funny book, I will say. I mean, obviously it's funny because she's, you know, a comedian. But there are some little snippets in there that are actually really insightful and that I agree 100% and completely. It seems like, oh my gosh, that's my life kind of thing that I think a lot of people would really relate to her on certain levels.
Right.
So I will say, even if you're not a huge SNL fan or something like that,
right,
if your mother or if... You know, especially if you're a mother, I think I relate to her a lot on those terms. If you're somebody who's ever had trouble, like, not knowing what your real passion was for and then discovering it and, you know, different things like that, she really talks a lot about that kind of stuff. So
I was on the wrong tab. Apologize. So, yeah, Audible. So, in short.
And there's her book right up there. Yes,
please. audibletrial.com/steampowerpodcast. You help us. You help them. You help yourself to get in some education and learning and some knowledge and some entertainment. It's a win-win-win. It's a three-way win.
I might try the Jodi Picoult book, too, though. I don't know. I used to love reading her books, but.
I don't even know who she is, and I'll admit because I'm a dude.
It's fiction.
I'm sure it's fiction. I mean. Yeah.
But a lot of her books had the same formula. That's the issue. They're kind of formulaic.
Well, but people like it. It's like comfort.
I mean, she has
a
lot of books.
It's comfort reading.
Exactly. You know what you're getting from her.
You know what you're getting.
Yes.
It is what it is.
I think I'm kind of on the the biography, autobiography kick for some reason right now. I'm kind of interested in learning about other people's lives.
That was my first Audible book back when I actually bought the CDs, was Albert Einstein.
I remember that.
Yep.
Yes, I remember you listening
back
to that.
Back before the smartphones and such. So, yes, anyway, one more time. I'll ping it one more time. Yes, audibletrial.com/steampowerpodcast.
And it works very seamlessly. Like if you have Bluetooth in your car, put the app on your phone. It just
Android,
seamlessly
iPhone,
connects on there. So
Windows Phone. And if you head on over to, again, audibletrial.com/steampowerpodcast, you can sign up for a free 1 month trial that gives you one free credit so you can try it out. Listen to a book, download a book. If you like it and you want to stick around, you're going to be signing up. It's $14.95 a month, and each month you get a new credit. You can let the credits accumulate. And I think most books are one credit.
Yeah.
There are very few that are two.
Amy Poehler's was one. Probably the really long ones are two.
Yeah. And of course, if you're like, oh man,
and I'll say the Amy Poehler book was one credit, but it's 7 hours of actual listening time. So yeah,
they're usually really good.
Yes.
It's not going to be like, haha, we charge you and you get like 5 minutes of entertainment.
No, it's 7 hours of actual. Yeah.
Which goes by listening. Fast, really.
In the car, when you've got an hour this way, hour that way, half hour. Yeah, it does. Yep. It really does. The only thing with the Amy Poehler book, I will say, if you have children, it's something you need to listen to without the kids in the car.
It's mommy time. It's yes, mommy time listening.
It's mommy or daddy reading because she does drop some F-bombs in there.
That's what she does.
So, yes. She does it in a very, funny way, but made me laugh out loud a couple times in the car, but it's definitely not something you want to listen to with your baby in the backseat.
Well, babies would be okay, right? Because they're not really understanding.
Until point. Your baby becomes, starts saying that one day and you're like, where did they learn that from?
Would be awesome. What's daddy, what's baby's first word?
F-bomb.
F-bomb. All right. I'm sorry. I had to cut it because I forgot. Made sure I had the right. I thought I had the wrong week up of episodes, but no.
No, nope, we're 62, right?
We are at episode 62, yep. And I got the right. Right, so let's get to the stories for this week, shall we?
Okay, sounds good.
Let's do this. Let me hit the right button. Oh man, I hit the wrong button. What did I do? See, I told you. Share that one. My computer's
there you
crazy.
Go.
All right.
The rich and their robots are about to make half the world. Now, how long have we been hearing this?
All right. So this this came out of a study at Oxford, that is working with the Economists, or was highlighted in this week's Economist. Basically, there's two big statements they're making. 85 people, the next was it two huge statisticians. Let me see here. In the next how many years? Next couple years? I don't tell you. So right now, I think it's maybe even within this year is what I've heard. So 85 people in this world will command as much wealth, money, as the poorest bottom half of the world. 50%.
I believe that.
So with that 3.5 billion people,
yeah,
will have as much wealth as 85 people.
I believe that.
85.
There are some people in this world that have so much money that they could wipe their butt with it.
And, yeah.
And have stacks of it next to the toilet.
And then the other statement is that 40% of today's current existing jobs are likely to be automated over the next two decades.
That I don't know if I believe.
Actually, I think this 85 people owning as much money, I think it's actually already happened. That's where we're at right now.
Yes, I do believe that.
And you wonder why there's issues. But it's just me. it comes down to lack of diversity.
85 people control the world.
Yeah.
Less than 100 people rule the world. Because we all know money rules the world.
It does. Well.
We are a capitalist society.
Right. There has to be counterbalances. So basically, you know, we've already seen. You're right. Every industrial revolution, or excuse me, every revolution of technology, be it the industrial, agricultural, digital, information age, jobs that existed previously are no longer needed. So, like, for instance, the dude that created the buggy whip for, you know, horse-drawn carriages.
Yes.
Not employed much anymore. Guys that used to go around and re-oil the street lamps because we didn't have electricity.
Yes.
Those jobs are now gone, right?
But I think over time we've compensated
for
with other jobs.
Right, and that's what I think the fundamental concept about this article is that in the recent Great Recession we had is that we're seeing what's called a jobless recovery. That yes, the stock market is picking up, investments are being rewarded, but the middle class, lower middle class, isn't seeing it. Or any benefit because the rewards that are coming are without jobs. So in other words, because of our investment in this case, the article is probably making assertions about a robotics, smart computer, you know, Watson kind of technology that can do.
Yes.
And the issue has been historically that the jobs that have been taken have been very blue collar jobs.
Yes.
What this article goes on to talk about though is that the future is going to be, yes, even more blue-collar jobs, but now we're going to start really attacking white-collar jobs.
Are we still going to need people to operate the computers and the robots?
Well, depending on how far of a sci-fi person you are, some people say no, that we will get to the point with artificial intelligence, and that's why people like – which is interesting. I wrote an article recently for Mouser about this, where even people like Elon Musk and Bill Gates have actually donated money to research to prevent – preventing artificial intelligence from, you know, deciding to want to kill us.
Yes.
But
I remember that article.
You know, I thought that was a little too much. But I did agree with the fact that jobs are going to be affected. But so here's the issue, right? Is how do you get to a point where, yes, jobs that can be done better by electronics and computers do get, you know, are treated as such. But then the question is, what do we replace the jobs with for people? Because I firmly believe that this isn't going to be the end. I think right now we're just we're affected by is the lack of imagination that we're being very selfish, very self-centered, and it's all about preserving wealth. It's about handing out. I forgot who said it recently. I think it was someone at like the World Bank or something that, or even maybe one of our senators here in the U.S. was, we're so preoccupied with distributing scarce resources that we're not focused on what we should be, which is generating wealth and generating prosperity.
Mm-hmm.
So, where do I think we need to start doing things? It's human exploration. It's becoming a spacefaring society. It's about exploring the ocean's depths. From what I look, when I read history, when we have these gluts of dark ages, it's because we stopped being explorers. And, you know, so back in the last dark ages, you know, as we came out with the Renaissance, we started exploring. Europeans started coming exploring the Americas. And then we have had this, you know, for now the last 300-400 years, we've had this great, you know, explosion in wealth and creating these democracies and creating middle class that didn't exist. But then we stopped. And, you know, we've kind of said to ourselves, well, this is the world and that's all it is, and we're done. And exploration is over. I think somehow exploration plays the role of forcing the redistribution of wealth, so to speak. And again, not just in space, but also here in the U.S. with the resources in our Earth's oceans. But I think that's the answer. I think we
need. So do you think that's where the jobs lie? in the research and development of things.
I know. I think my point is that there will be jobs that we can't even think of today. No one would think that this kind of job would possibly ever exist. Just like try to go back to the time of even, say, George Washington, Ben Franklin, and try to explain to them what a computer programmer was. They had no concept of what, you know. So my point is, we are at that same point right now. We don't really have any clue. So
you're saying that the jobs will be there just in a different way.
There will be jobs format that we can't even think of today. Like,
yes.
You wouldn't think would be, you know, it's not just like that we're creating new jobs of the same type. It's literally we will be creating classifications of jobs.
But to that matter, we need to do what we were talking about earlier and revamp our colleges and universities and that sort of thing to be a little more tailor-made for what the kids need.
Exactly. We got to this point and everything. The biggest problem with technology, and especially you look at the tech companies, they become so dependent on what made them successful that eventually kills them. That eventually the company gets destroyed because they're so reliant on what got them success, they can't change.
Mm-hmm.
That's why Apple, you know, in the post Steve Jobs return era, was not afraid of cannibalizing their own sales. Any other company with the iPod would have never made the iPhone because they'd be too scared of destroying their money maker, which was the iPod.
Yeah.
Same thing with jobs and our economy and where we are today, that we have to be, you know, again, I'm not claiming this, you know, here's the magic bullet, but I'm just saying in general, it seems to me that exploration has always been the thing that drove humanity to improve, to change. And without us exploring to the Americas and eventually colonizing, eventually having a revolution, starting a country, modern democracy didn't exist. So my point is, once we start getting out beyond our planet, that's once we start, you know, colonizing other planets, asteroids, the moon, we will once again create job classes and new types of jobs that will take care of this issue that we're seeing now.
I think there will be a lot more jobs that deal with space in the future. I definitely see that.
It's
just where we're headed.
We're just right now, we are too lazy. Right now, it's all about, we're at this point where we want to use money to make money. And we're only so concerned about the money. We're not worrying about the investment. We're very narrow focused. It's if I invest this much money today, how much money will I get next quarter? Whereas I invest this billions of dollars or trillions of dollars today, how many multi-trillion dollars will I create in an economy in the future? For our children and our children's children by mining asteroids, by setting up colonies on the moon. It seems to me it's kind of blatantly obvious, but obviously for most people, the problem is, I think, is people equate that to too much to be science fiction.
I mean, it's scary. Yeah. It's scary to a lot of people.
That's science fiction. Yeah, anything is not possible at one point. And Arthur C. Clarke said, you know, any sufficiently advanced technology does appear to be magic. Well, yeah, that's true. But we do it. We landed on the moon. Think about it. It's almost been 50 years since we landed on the moon.
I know. That's almost hard to comprehend.
You have more technology. You have multiple times over more processing power in your one phone than they had on the Apollo, even the space shuttle, even today's computer that drives the Orion spacecraft is still, for other reasons, you know, doesn't have as much horsepower as what we have sitting in this room today. So to me, the whole argument of, it can't be done because it's too hard, it's basically
just, you know, laziness.
It's laziness. Put my head in the sand and I don't want to deal with it. But until we deal with it, until we start making those wise investments, we're going to be in this rut, my opinion.
I think it's a good one.
Well, it's a bad rut. That's a good...
Good opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So shall we move on to another billionaire story?
Sure.
That is someone who's probably trying to help fix this. Billionaire teams up with NASA to mine the moon. Now...
Well, I don't know if they're trying to help fix this or not from my perspective of this, but...
Well, let's. But
I think this is somebody making money.
Yes, but in the process, will he create enough jobs? And will he?
Yes, that's. He is opening doors. I'll give him that.
I want to be clear that I'm not anti-capitalist in any way. My point is, when the capital is just sitting in basically the bank doing nothing, it's useless. Money for the sake of money is worthless. Gold for the sake of gold is worthless.
That's absolutely. You know what? That's funny. Can you say that again? Because
it's the pursuit of using it.
I think I remember telling somebody a few years ago that money for the sake of money is absolutely worthless.
Anyway, I know sometimes it's easier said than done. But my point is, so here it is. A company.
You need to use it to enjoy your life.
Founded by Naveen Jain. He's starting a company called Moon Express, or has started a company called Moon Express, that will be trying to send the
Mountain
first.
Mountain View, California. Isn't that where Apple's based out of? Google.
Okay. The letter everybody is now. Apple's
Cupertino.
It's just down the road thing. It's kind of like the difference between Hollywood, Maryland and California, Maryland.
Okay, I see.
So anyway, they're hoping to land the first commercial moon lander by next year onto the moon, 2016.
So do you think it's any coincidence that they're based out of the same town as Google is based out of?
No, because right now that's where a lot of the cutting edge big thinker people are right now.
You don't think it's anything to do with Google?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Sergey and not Larry, but the other former CEO. Oh, man. Anyway, it'll come back to me in a minute. They've invested in companies that are looking at asteroid mining.
Okay.
Founder, the CEO. So, yeah. So my point is, you know, again, this goes back to the problem. There's 85 guys, and they're probably amongst those. Maybe not. I mean, they're well off, but I don't know if they're that well off.
I mean,
a lot of this is family wealth kind of stuff. But anyway, so NASA has this it's a lunar initiative. They're calling it. It's called Catalyst, which is the idea is to spur U.S. industrial capabilities. The commercialization of space exploration. They're working with two companies here, Astrobotic Technologies, which is in Pittsburgh, which is interesting. And Mast and Space Systems of Mojave. They're also developing a robotic spacecraft, but Moon Express apparently here, just won the Google X Prize a few, months back, which is a prize that Google puts out to, again, spur this kind of invention and innovation. I think in their case, it was like the spacecraft had to land itself or had to fly by itself.
Now, who gets these, you know, when they mine the moon?
Right. So, like here in the article,
what
it says,
do they,
among the moons,
the proceeds belong?
Right. Like, among the moon's rich, vast riches, gold, cobalt, iron, palladium, platinum.
And that belongs to the company that mines it?
And as you've pointed out before, there is an international agreement.
Exactly. Like, who does the moon belong to?
That said no one can own it, right? So
what gives this company the right to go on the moon and say, I'm going to mine it and I'm going to take the proceeds from that?
I think you hit on my point. You know what this is going to breed? The first time a job? Space lawyers.
Yes.
But at least it'll be a new class of legal precedents. You're right. I mean, I do not claim to be any clue on how the international relations of this works. Especially, you know, one thing would be like government to government, but now it's like, well, how's the fact that it's a private company that's potentially going to be
multinational
anyway?
That to me just doesn't sit well. I mean, I'm not saying it's not a good idea that we go mine the moon. I think it is. I think it absolutely is a good idea that we get beyond our own planet and start looking for resources out in space. I think that's a great idea. However, I think it's a very slippery slope when it comes to the legality of it.
Well, the issue is right now, because what countries can do it? Well, obviously, there's only a few countries that have
The wealth to do it.
The wealth and the infrastructure to do it. And therefore, if they do go out, then the wealth divide only
increases. And what gives that country more right to it over the smaller country that doesn't have the wealth and the prestige and the power to do it, except for the fact that they just don't have the resources to do it.
Right. Well, I mean, and I guess, you know, in some ways you could also...
Does part of what they mine belong to that country?
Well, I mean, to me, it goes back to the whole thing of the before. I mean,
does it belong to the planet? Do you distribute it evenly between all the countries? What do you do?
But, I mean, look, I would think we have precedence because when people left Europe to travel to North America, or in South America for that matter, you know, obviously, I would imagine there were smaller countries couldn't send as many ships, couldn't explore as much, whereas the bigger nations. So I would assume that there is legal frameworks at the international level that deal with that. Granted, now we are in a world where before there was vast stretches of land that were undiscovered.
Think back then it was just sort of assumed that money and prestige and wealth equals power and the right to do that. You know, that you had monarchies and you had...
Right.
Countries just accepted that fact that the Englands and the Spains and the Frances and, you know, those kind of countries were going to be the ones to set off and be the bulk of the landholders. But now in this, like, in the world that we live in, I think you've got smaller countries that are going to step up and say, hey, we have just as much a right to this stuff that's on the moon as you guys do. Just because we can't send somebody out to space to get it doesn't mean it's not ours to get.
Or does it? I mean, I'm simply trying to play the devil's advocate of if you couldn't.
But that it comes down to who does the moon belong to. I thought you said there was already a precedent that the moon couldn't belong to one country.
Right, and that's the thing that I don't understand how.
So if the moon belongs to all the countries, there has to be some way to give them their fair share of what. Yes.
Either by population or something. I don't know.
Yeah. I think so.
It's interesting. But again, it goes back to, you know, we've had the problems here on the planet for so long. Wouldn't it be fun to have some different problems and have to deal with this as a race and society?
Space people problems.
Space people problems. We've first world problems. Then we'll have second world problems. Well, new world. Or, I don't know how you would say it. It's moon world.
Sci-fi problems.
Sci-fi problems. So anyway, if by the end of 2016,
it's an interesting story.
Moon Express can do all this if they can. I think the X Prize that they're gunning for next is land on the moon, travel, I think, like 500 meters or 500 yards or 500 something another, take high definition video and send it back to the Earth. And if they do that, they win a $30 million prize. So,
Interesting.
And then, of course, then, you know, the research that the lessons we learn, we take from it, we begin to do real no crap. Let's start colonizing.
I think definitely the law schools in America better start preparing for this kind of legal battle.
So yeah, it's at least it'll be a new problem.
The Yales and the Stanfords and the Harvards.
Because if we have one more patent suing over the shape of my icons on my smartphone, I'm going to go crazy. I would rather have the lawyers fight about moon exploration than the shape of my of my app icons. Moving on.
Sure.
It's been a good one so far. I'm enjoying this one. I like space. You know that.
I don't recall this story.
Well, surprise. I'll read it to you.
This on our original thing?
It has a yes next to it. So,
what was your description of it?
Cortical modem. Here, let me go back to the show notes so everybody can see. I can pumping visual data direct into your brain. Yes.
Okay. Yes, I did.
Okay.
Yes.
So DARPA, we talked about them.
I stand corrected because I do recall this thing.
Acquisition, advanced research.
What was the one called in Lost?
The
DARPA, not DARPA, but what was it called?
Dharma.
Yeah, that was right. Yeah.
That's actually funny. I never put that two together. That would be awesome. So they had been doing, you know, DARPA is like kind of like the blue sky, pie in the sky research. May never come to fruition, but at least we need to explore it.
Like the Dharma Initiative, right?
Basically. With Dharma. So the idea of here is basically How can we figure out a way to pump data directly into your brain, visual data?
Yes.
And apparently we're at the point where it goes on to talk about here that basically in the short term, here's the thing. When DARPA announces something, it usually means that they're actually way further along than they admit. Because you got to think that the stuff that's really cutting edge is still classified, right?
Yes.
So their short-term goal was to be able to basically – we've seen in all the movies where like the soldiers has a heads-up display and they can look over. Well, the problem is that, you know, again, technology in a battle we're finding this out with like the JSF has a really weird looking super sci-fi helmet.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is like getting the parallax error reduced and being able to actually have these helmets kind of things work. Again, because everyone's got different types of heads, different.
Yeah.
So the idea was
different peripheral vision.
Instead of wearing something like Google Glass or just have, what if we just,
yeah, whatever happened to Google Glass?
Did it bomb? They've quietly shut down with the Explorer program.
Mm-hmm.
Which means you can no longer buy.
I remember for a while it was sort of like, oh, this really innovative thing. But I always thought it was going to bomb because of just what they called it. Because it was like.
I
thought the GL was too. You know, you could call it something else too.
Yeah. The glass hole thing.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
You know what? I could just see people walking down the street saying,
tell me this. here's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking Google is going to be feeling the same thing that Microsoft has done with Apple for so many years. That, you know, Microsoft and Bill Gates tried for years to make the tablet PC thing happen, right? And it never worked out for poor Bill Gates. And that
Microsoft. They're still trying.
And then Apple comes along and goes iPad, which even me initially was like, iPad? All it is a giant iPod Touch or a giant iPhone. No one's going to want this. And I mean,
No one.
No. So I've got an unfortunate feeling for Google that in about 3 or 4 years, Apple will have Apple Glass, and everyone will just
like the apple in my eye or something. Maybe they'll call it something different.
Well, because the Apple Watch that's coming out next month? You know what the high end is going for? How much the high end gold one will be?
I don't even want to know because.
How much do you think an Apple Watch, a little watch?
$5,000.
Double that.
$10,000. Oh my gosh.
Hey, that's the base price. Guess what it could go up to for the
limited edition? Even want to know.
$17,000. For the gold.
Who would pay that for?
It's going to be very limited runs.
People don't even pay that for a Rolex.
No, apparently Rolexes are more.
So I would know because I've never had one. But
maybe not Rolexes. Maybe that Rolex is like the poor man's rich man thing. I don't know.
No, Rolex is like the rich guy watch.
So anyway, let's take this all back to
Google. Yeah, Rolexes are expensive, but
and Google, I think eventually it will catch
on. So you think Apple's going to come out with something similar that is more relatable to what people need?
So there's two things. There's virtual reality and there's augmented reality. So
yes.
Like Oculus Rift is virtual reality. I put a helmet on and I completely replace the world that I'm in with a new world, a virtual constructed world. Whereas augmented reality is simply putting a display up over your existing reality. So you can still see the real world.
Mm-hmm.
You just now get some additional data. I do think that idea will catch on more. I think the augmented reality will catch on in video gaming and in certain things like maybe perhaps some surgery things, medical. But I don't think it'll catch on mainstream. I think the augmented reality will catch on. The problem also with Google Glass, let's face it, is that it wasn't sexy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they try to go to some model show or fashion show.
I just thought it was sort of weird to have this little thing next to your eye. It was kind of like,
and with all wearables,
it's hard to look out of the corner of your eye like that.
And with all wearables right now, the issue is, of course, battery life.
No, yeah,
nobody wants to have to charge something every day. We'll do it with our phone.
Well, I was going to say we do,
but that's the extent,
we charge stuff every day.
That's the extent of our pain tolerance. But anyways, with DARPA and this idea that they have with this cortical modem is bypass that. It's simply actually trick your brain into thinking there's a display. So basically pump the data that a heads-up display directly, not onto your eye and let your eye see it, but actually after the photons have been collected at your eyeball, simply add additional data to that stream so that it looks like a heads-up display to you, but there's no other external...
So now this is supposed to improve your memory and things, right?
Well, no, for military applications to be able to have like displays up so you know where the good guys, bad guys are.
Yeah.
It's basically how can you give people enough data in a useful manner so that they can actually do their job? So the article talks about their short-term goal here is within probably the next year, maybe 2 years, have a device that's the size of about, like 2 quarters or so that would be able to pump data into your eye that would give you about the equivalent resolution of your nightstand, your alarm clock.
Okay.
LED light stand. So like, not high res. We're not talking about dumping in high res graphics images or even it looking pretty, but basic text that you could overlay and see. And again, you would have no external, to me looking at you, I would not be able to tell that probably, other than you're probably somewhere in the back of your head somewhere or had to drill something into your, I don't know how they get it into your brain.
Yeah.
But from an eyeball perspective, looking just at your eyes, I wouldn't tell that there's anything different. Whereas with Google Glass, people knew and hence the name Glassels. So yeah. Anyway, again, this is from DARPA. Long-term goals, that's not the short-term goal, right? Long-term goal, you're right, is to basically restore. How do you restore sight?
Yeah. Like
how could you, take, bypass, if the damage is somewhere between, the retina of your eyeball and into your brain, bypass all that circuitry and just dump signal, that's the long-term goal. So basically giving the blind the ability to see it.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Sounds cool.
It's cool. Want to move on?
Sure.
To our last story. Then This is the last one. We only had five stories this week. And okay. We've actually been going for about an hour, actually.
Wow.
So I actually read this one with more interest than everyone. I didn't think I would.
I thought it would interest you, actually.
Because it ties everything. It's
yes, it's
psychology, it's, brain, neuroscience, digital, electronics.
Embedded. Yes.
But at the same time, it has this flavor of, haven't we already tried this kind of stuff before? Like in the night, or the turn of the century, the 20th century, electricity was all the rage with,
yes, there were medicine. A lot of medical devices that tried to use electricity to shock things in your,
right. And
your brain and your body. And
so I guess we should back up real quick. So there's a startup company called Think, THYNC, that is working on a device that does what exactly, Mrs. Psychology Neuro Person? What are they trying to?
Well, I mean, basically, it's like it says, it's trying to improve your mood. So it's trying to get you to alter your state of consciousness to some degree
through the introduction of
stimulus,
very small electrical current.
Yes.
Which I think they're saying here, it's called TDSC, transcranial direct current stimulation, TDCS.
Which, I mean, I think, honestly, this has a ton of potential for psychology because I think this could replace a lot of prescription drugs if we get it going and get this sort of hone down this sort of shock therapy instead of having people on so many prescriptions for things like depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder. There's so many different things that, there are chemicals in your brain that are lacking that if this could help to stimulate those chemicals into producing
because
more.
Because here's my question.
It would be
The Kevin, awesome. So isn't it, correct me if I'm wrong here, because I don't really understand this world, but the chemicals, at the end of the day, the chemicals in the medicine do have a chemical reaction with the chemicals in your body. But I guess is the, at the end of the day, though, are we about trying to stimulate neuron behavior action? So basically, because neurons are...
No, we're about trying to replace chemicals.
So my question is, even the medicine we use today, it's not the... Does it eventually cause neurons to fire in such a way? Or is it actually about soaking up...
It's about balancing the chemicals? It's about balancing the chemicals out. So what a lot of the drugs that today do is, say you have depression and you have a lack of, just say, like serotonin or something like that. You have a lack of a chemical in your brain. What the drug that you take does is replaces that chemical. It doesn't actually stimulate your body into producing the chemical naturally itself,
okay,
per se. Or if it does, there are certain medicines that do, but if it does, it's only to get you to a point to normalcy. And you have to keep taking the drug in order for it to happen. It's not something where it stimulates it long term and then you can eventually come off of it and your chemical reaction is back to working.
Okay. I guess because my thinking is here is, this is an electrical device, right? So obviously I'm affecting the neurons because neurons are the circuits of the brain, right?
Yes.
So at the end of the day, electricity can only affect, you know, current flowing is only an electromagnetic thing. So at the end of the day, whatever I'm generating has to be affecting the brain through the fact that it's an electromagnetic field created. So does that then in turn make the brain release different chemicals, or are we simply?
I think it could. I think that's where there needs to be a lot more research done into this, because I don't think there's enough research done into what potential this has yet. I think there's definitely the potential for your brain to start learning how to produce those chemicals again on its own.
Right.
It's just a matter of what to effectively stimulate in order to get it to do that.
Right. Because what the article talks about here is that this is quote, it gives you an energy vibe that the company contends can make it feel as though you have just had a Red Bull or similar energy drink. The calm vibe, the one I just ran, is for whenever you're frustrated. So, yes, let me go back up to what I remember reading.
And I mean, think of how many people take things like Xanax,
right,
or something like that to try to help them relax or for their anxiety, when all it could take would be just a little shock to help your body learn how to effectively do that on your own and not need medication for
it. So for people that are not going to get a chance to read this, so what is this thing? What is Think coming up with, right? So from what I understand is the magic sauce that they have developed is specific locations for the electrodes to put on your head.
Yes.
As well as the device, and it connects conveniently, of course, it connects to your smartphone. And inside there's different, so you can have different, what they call vibes, different, I guess, settings kind of thing.
Yes.
So if you wanted, again, the calm vibe or the, I want to be the creative vibe, that it connects to these electrodes and tells them basically different patterns to fire the electricity. Yes.
And
in
I
different
think,
ways.
I think they're on their way with this. What I don't think they've done is enough research on how to actually get it to stimulate it to do it on its own on a long-term basis. Like, I think they could maybe get it to do it short-term, like medicine does, basically. Right. Like, you know, oh, your anxiety level is bad, take a Xanax and it helps.
And like medicine, they're finding that not everyone responds.
Right? Yes, exactly. Because chemicals... You know, any chemist or biologist would tell you chemicals are a very tricky thing, and the chemicals in your brain are so complex and individualized that finding a right medicine that works if you're somebody that has mental health issues is a huge deal. So this could be potentially dangerous for people who are self-medicating with this. That's my right. only concern with this is for people who self-medicate by using illegal drugs, like, say, somebody who needs an energy vibe and they want to smoke meth or inject cocaine or something like that. And they're going to pull out their smartphone and say, oh, I want an energy vibe, so I'm going to hook up this little neuron thing. People who are self-medicating like that, not using it under a doctor's order, that's scary. But I think it's a good idea. I just think the medical community needs to embrace it a little more.
Well, no doubt this would have to be regulated by the FDA, right?
Yes. I really hope that this isn't something that just comes out as one of those things that you can buy from Brookstone as a cool Christmas gift for somebody comes with an app. And, oh, somebody who wants to have, don't drink your coffee in the morning, just zap yourself with the energy jolt. I hope that's not the case with this.
Yeah, because, I mean, from an electrical perspective, it only takes a few milliamps across, you know, and granted, it would have to be across the heart. But, you know, to stop the heart doesn't take that much current,
yes,
surprisingly.
And I would imagine you could really mess your brain up if you, somebody who's looking for a high, like people who self-medicate again with illegal drugs or even prescription drugs, somebody who's looking for a high and does one too many calm jolts or energy jolts or something like that, you're going to mess yourself up.
And so far, all the studies, because again, this is a company that's trying to go for a you know, commercially viable product. You know, all the studies that they have done thus far are the research they've done themselves internally. They have released a study in it's a non-peer-reviewed science journal called Bioprescription IV or BioRxIV. So in other words,
they haven't gone to that step up of the scientific community yet.
But in this study, they did, take it with the grain of salt that it is, that when they took another, what they called a sham transcranial direct current stimulating device, and theirs, which is, I guess, again, they found some magic sauce somehow, that compared to the sham ones, they say, if you're using analysis of the person's skin properties, electrical properties of the skin, saw that the body's response in 20 subjects found that the body's response was reduced by 50%. The markers of stress on the skin's electrical properties reduced by 50%, and that there was a stress marker that I guess in your saliva.
Mm-hmm.
And they found that using the sham version, it increased by 6% because people were actually getting shocked to the point of, I guess, almost pain. Whereas with their system,
actually releases chemicals and things like that in your brain. So that can be a
right. And that's, I guess, that's
good what thing.
Right. But I guess in this point, they found that in this particular saliva samples that they saw more, they saw the more of those chemical markers of pain versus with it went down by 20%. Those same markers went down by 20% instead of increasing by 6% when people used the Finck treatment. So the point was traditional TDCS, you had more stress indicators in your saliva, whereas with ours, it actually went down by 20%.
I think this has a lot of potential medically. However, I think it is really on that fine line between going to go commercial before it gets a chance to be thoroughly researched and good come out of it, or if it's going to go the medical route and get researched and actually be able to do some good instead of actually becoming some taboo thing that harms people.
Yeah, I think
it's really on the cusp.
They've got to get it into third-party independent researchers.
Yes.
Quickly to not get, you know, because I get it as an electrical guy, electronics guy, I get how there's, you know, the brain is simply this really fancy computer that still uses electricity. So therefore influencing it you by the use of electricity sounds very plausible. And to do it in a way, and it is, and today we do understand more about the body and the brain than we did in the turn of the 20th century. So certainly,
it's our technology is better. You have to do it in such a way that you don't harm yourself. Right. And therein is that fine line between you just can't have it be a smartphone app where people hook electrodes up to their brain, go to Brookstone and buy it, and say, "Hey, I want to feel calm today, so I'm going to stick these little shocky things on my head and shock myself calm." That's not going to be a good thing.
We'll see. We'll track this one and see if we hear anything back.
That said, if it comes out, go to Brookstone and buy it for me for Christmas. That would be what you want.
So here, it's Pi Day again, so there's a lot of great images.
The Simpsons.
Simpson win. Yeah. Some of these don't really blow up that well.
Have an irrational day? What does that mean?
It's an irrational number, right?
Oh.
Doesn't.
I don't know. I'm not a math whiz.
Yeah, not that. We'll ask your brother next time we see him. So let me go ahead and let me end this one up here. Kill the camera. Go back to the camera. Something with the camera. God, see, there's something going on. Like every now and then, this computer works beautifully. And other times it goes crazy. Just like, I guess, people. Maybe it needs some think.
Yeah.
And it needs some vibes.
It needs some shockies.
Transcranial direct current stimulation.
It needs
Mr. Laptop. So I guess with that does it for the week. Is there anything else you need or want to share?
No, I think we're good.
We didn't share any. I picked up an oscilloscope.
Yes, you did. You didn't share your product.
We'll do that next week.
We can do that next week, yeah.
The Siglent. I needed that for some projects that are coming up that I need to do a little bit of timing.
Yeah.
So.
I haven't picked up anything other than yarn, so.
And our love.
Yes.
So with that, as always, you can head over to steampowerpodcast.com where there's links to literally everything else that we do, where we're at. And then, of course, the other big place that people sing, hang out and share ideas is google.com/plussteampowerpodcast.
You know, I did want to add, though, we are planning a trip to Walt Disney World.
Yep, we are.
So if any of our listeners have any
knowledge,
insight, any tips, tricks, because it's going to be my first trip in a long time.
Probably
your first trip in a long time, right?
It's
our daughter's first trip in ever. Yes.
In ever, right?
So,
yeah, she's not paying attention.
I haven't been in probably close to 20 years.
Close to 30 years. I know, I didn't say that.
No, it hasn't been that long for you, but so it's been a while since either one of us have been, and it's going to be her first time. So, and if anybody's been there recently and knows any things that are must-sees, must-do,
and our,
that
our,
kind of thing.
Our goal is to make this as paint, like we literally want to get to the airport.
Any tech things that are cool that we want to see or check out or...
So, within the confines of Disney itself.
Yes. Yeah, I don't know if we're going to be going to
the greater Orlando area. We just want to stay in the warm, happy blanket that is all Disney. And then fly back.
Yes.
All right.
So that would be my only thing to add.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. So I guess this is, what are we? Are there pretty much, we'll have one more in March. Yeah. The 28th.
We'll figure something out.
People getting older. It's rough.
Yep, because we have a 10th birthday coming up.
Yay, double digits. All right. So with that in mind, I got to get running. I'm up to the third episode of Gears of Resistance, so check that out.
Cool.
I'm still, again, it's still in beta. I'm still trying to figure out the best way to do, like, the circuit diagrams. I've tried doing the whiteboard on the table, trying to done it up here on a stand. I don't like either one of them yet, so I'm still trying to figure that out. I may actually just fire up the screen sharing and draw the apps.
And you're going to get some guests on there, right?
And we're going to do guests. We're going to do some product reviews. We're going to do some project ideas on top of the educational one. So, yeah, it's still a work in progress, but we're getting there.
Yep.
There's some interest. And I guess with that, thank you all very much for listening. And again, steampowerpodcast.com. Find everything else. And until next time, y'all have a really great week. Make it a great week. Stay
quirky.
I'm going to get this right one day. Stay quirky
and keep it steamy.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Later.